Well, hey everybody, welcome to Recovery Jam. It's good to see everyone on this cold night. You can all come gather around the fireplace and we can crack open our big books and our AA 12 and 12, and we're gonna jump in to talk about steps 8 and 9. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. If you haven't, heard me before, or met me before, and I love, crazy enough, I love discussing amends. And a lot of people, I think, don't really like it. But for me, this was really weird, where I felt like this relationship with God, it kind of like sealed the deal. It was like, before this point, a lot of what I did was theory. And for me, it was real practice when I had to humble myself and lay aside my reputation and instead embrace integrity. And I felt like this was the great leap of faith that really helped, kind of solidify my relationship with God. So steps 8 and 9 we're going to discuss tonight. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. In step 9, we then make the direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So in the AA 12 and 12, and we're gonna kind of flip back and forth, but mostly we'll be in the big book, but I just wanna kind of jump in the AA 12 and 12. It says, on page 77, it says, steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backwards and try to discover where we have been at fault. And next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we've done. And third, having thus cleaned away the debris of the past, we consider how our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human we know. So it's like we look back, we discover where we were at fault, we then try to clean it up as best we can, and then we take all this knowledge that we now have about ourselves and we try to live in agreement with these amends that we make. We try to embrace the change. We try to actually be the change. So if you notice steps 8 and 9, they're not focused on what other people have done. In fact, we're attempting to repair the damage we've done, looking at what we've done. We're looking to clean up our past. And we do this so that we can have the best possible relations with everyone we know. And, I think about that because it's not just the people we love and want to continue to have in our lives, but it's actually looking to have the best possible relations with everybody. Whether you want to be in relationships with them or not. And it's very different from what I once thought. I thought that if I didn't like the person or want a relationship with them, then there's no point. Then I don't have to. Then I'll just take that as information and I'll move forward, right? But, and if they possibly did something to me, well, then no way was I going to consider making an amend. Right? And that's not what this says here. So in the AA 12 and 12, it goes on to say that this reopening of emotional wounds, some old, some perhaps forgotten, and some still painfully festering, will at first look like a purposeless and pointless piece of surgery. Right? So it looks like it's going to be really painful and pointless. But if a willing start is made, then the great advantages of doing this will so quickly reveal themselves that the pain will be lessened as one obstacle after another melts away. So, it doesn't seem to make sense that opening up an old wound or poking, at a current pain is going to bring me peace. And yet, we do find that there's great advantages when we begin to do this. And the pain lessens and the problems begin to disappear. And what I've learned are that the things that I have often been so afraid of were not nearly as scary in reality, you know? And it seems like the more I avoid things, the greater they seem to grow. And the thing that I always come back to whenever the step calls on me to do things that I believe are unnecessary or too difficult is this one very significant fact. I have no other options. I don't have another choice. You know, my disease drove me into this state of complete hopelessness. And I admitted complete defeat, right? And being defeated propels us into taking action. That's what it was for me. You know, the 12 and 12 also goes on to say on page 78 that these obstacles, however, are very real. The first and one of the most difficult has to do with forgiveness, right? So it's like if there's some old stuff there, we have to look at forgiveness. The moment we ponder a twisted or broken relationship with another person, our emotions go on the defensive. To escape looking at the wrongs we've done another, we resentfully focus on the wrong he has done us. This is especially true if he has, in fact, behaved badly. Triumphantly, we seize upon his misbehavior as the perfect excuse for minimizing or forgetting our wrong. So clearly, forgiveness is a huge part of steps 8 and 9, and right, and then 9. Here's what I discovered about myself in this process. And I'm not certain if this is like just a characteristic that's human, like a regular human characteristic, or if it's something that's real specific to addicts, or if it's something that's human and addicts have it, but you know, we can't live in the same way that regular people can because we're different. What I found out is that the longer I avoid owning up to something, the more I believe it's not my fault, right? The longer it takes me to examine it, little by little, I go from having done something that I know in my heart is wrong to being convinced in my mind that I am 100% the victim and this is just fair, right? What I've done to them, it's just, well, they deserve it, is really what it always comes down to. And that's such, first of all, that's such arrogance because I am not the judge. So it's not up to me to decide who's deserving of anything, right? That is not my job. That's not the role that I was assigned. You know, in the big book now on page 76, third paragraph, it says, we attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. And for us, ask means pray, right? We pray. And remember, it was agreed at the beginning, we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And by the way, this is the agreement that we make with our sponsors when we come into the program. You know, it's what we're told to ask someone before we actually agree to work with them. We're supposed to ask them on page 58, it says, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And usually people think that means, that means I'm willing to put the food down. Oh, that means I'm willing to get a nutritionist or get a food plan. And no. This is really what it means, this willing to go to any lengths. And usually what I say is sometimes people will say, my sponsor's unreasonable. This person I asked is asking me to do things like listen to a meeting every single morning or do specific things or call 3 people or, you know, text them if they have to change their food. And, you know, we're supposed to have a demonstration of a willingness to turn it all over, a willingness to take action. And I say usually if people are bristling and fighting and bucking over some of those things, just wait, right, until they have to make amends. These are the real issues where people are like, have to really ask themselves, are they willing? You know, my main problem really with being a compulsive overeater is I can't live with the discomfort of being human without the need to eat an enormous amount of food just to tolerate them. And step one was the complete utter misery of living without the food and living with the food. I had no choice. Both choices were pretty miserable. But abstinence without the steps and a relationship with God meant that I was going to have to live with the utter misery now of without the food. And so basically, I'm screwed and I can't do it. So why do I need to do these things, right? Why do I have to do all these steps then? Well, the why is unimportant. It doesn't really matter why. I can only say that doing the steps in their entirety and precisely following the directions have given me and countless others the ability to live without eating compulsively. And that not just living, but living happily, right? That's the promise, that you're not just going to have to tolerate life and muscle your way through life, but you're actually going to have peace and happiness. You know, the fourth paragraph now, it says, as we look over the list of our business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident, shy, hesitant, insecure about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them, it says. At the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people around us. So here it is. Our actual purpose is not really to get our lives in order. We think that's why we're doing this. I'm going to get everything in order. You know, that's kind of our motivation. That's what kind of gets us motivated to do it. But we learn that the way we get our lives in order is by no longer living for our own selfish means. We have a purpose, a true reason for living, and it's to be of maximum service. It's to fit ourselves to be of maximum service. And that in order for me to be happy, I have to stop focusing so much on being happy, right? My key to happiness is not to focus on how am I going to feel happy. And that sounds crazy, but we know it's the truth. That is the truth for us. You know, it further goes on to say that it is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of good will than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. So the reason we don't go to people talking about God right off the bat is not because we're embarrassed or ashamed of God. That is not it. But if we've hurt them and now we go to them and say, hey, I found God, they might not see us as being sincere, and we cannot be useful to them if they disregard everything we say because they see us as crazy religious freaks or they see us as being insincere. So we can talk about God if it will serve a good purpose. And we're told here, use common sense. You know, and really, you know, I think about it like if I hurt somebody and then I show up and the first thing out of my mouth is, oh, I'm good now, I got God. That's pretty hurtful. That's saying to the person, I have an opportunity to meet God, to get a relationship with God, and never mind what I did to you. What I did to you was sort of inconsequential. So we have to do it in the right order. First, we've got to demonstrate to people that we mean business, that we really are showing up as representatives of God. We use our actions first and our words about God second. You know, and so it's really more than talking about God. We need to demonstrate, show through our behavior God's presence, bring God into our behavior. You know, the question now, it says, of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we've done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our own faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. So if you take the bit in your teeth, you do this decisively. You're not being controlled by your feelings about what was done to you or even your opinions about this person. You know, and it says, it further goes on to say that it's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it more beneficial to us. Okay, what does that mean? What's the benefit we're after? Well, we're after a close relationship with God. That's the benefit. So we get a greater benefit when we make hard amends. And what I found out is my relationship with my Creator strengthens when I rely on Him. When I rely upon God, I find out this is a power that's reliable. Here's a power source that has my back, right? And I think, like, just like a good friend, you don't always find out that a friend is really reliable until you actually need to rely on them, until you're in a tough situation and you're uncomfortable and you turn around and there they are. Right? When everything is great, when you're on top of the world, that might be a fair weather friend. You just don't really know yet. And here it is with God, right? God is not a fair weather friend. God does not abandon me when I'm called to do things that are difficult. You know, in step seven, we learned that hard situations require more faith. And we find out that a friend is worthy of our trust when we need him. Page 77, it says, we are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the results. So, okay, so when we go to these people that we have to make some hard amends for, only focus on my faults. We are not to bring up theirs, only our own. This is kind of called a clean amends, right? We're not going to make it dirty. So if I'm gonna, so here's like an example, right? And it's like a basic one. I want to make an amends to my husband, for my behavior, right? Let's say I threw a temper tantrum one morning because the dishes were piled up in the sink, and I'm selfish. Basically, I want everything to my liking all the time. So if I'm going to go to my husband and apologize for my temper tantrum, I am not going to mention anything about his actions, you know, or what I believe may have triggered me, right? People like to say that, oh, that triggered me, that triggered me. You know, when I said to my husband that I regret harming the peace in our home when I have been demanding and threw temper tantrums, I don't say that I did this when you left the sink full of dishes. I leave that part out. I say I'm sorry for, like, you know, for causing disharmony in the home in the morning. I know the morning is a is an important time before we leave for the day, and we should, you know, I prefer to leave one another with love, right, than screaming like a lunatic. And I'm really sorry that I started the morning off on a bad foot. You know, what I found out is that my amends need to be much shorter than I want them to be. You know, when they're too long, I'm making excuses for my poor behavior, or I'm assigning blame rather than owning my part. Usually, when I'm owning my part, it's pretty quick. It's pretty much, I'm really sorry for my behavior. The way I behaved was inappropriate. It was unkind. And that's pretty much it. Not bringing in what other people did. That might be another conversation at another time, right? Because we're not servile or scraping, we're not doormats. But when I'm making an amend, I'm not bringing in what other people did. On page 78, the first paragraph says, "Sometimes the man we're calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we're doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We've made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam." So, it would be really nice if every amend we made was a fairy tale. Lived happily ever after, everything turned out great, check. And sometimes people make a mistake and they say, yeah, I did this amend, but I don't think it went so well because the person's really upset with me still. That's not a determination of whether or not the amend went well, because we don't demand forgiveness. We don't demand people feel happy with us afterwards. We make no demands on people. They might not come away liking us, and I've had a few amends that in the moment didn't go great. One, I attempted to make an amend to an aunt and she hung up on me. She wasn't interested in my apologies. And I've attempted to make one to a former friend. By the way, the former friend I did not want reckon I did not want like to re-enter my life. I did not want reconciliation. Right? I wanted to make a reparation. I wanted to repair. I wanted to own my part. I wanted to clean it up. But I was not looking to reestablish a friendship with her. And this particular friend made it very clear with me that she too did not want a relationship with me, nor does she even want me to approach her. It was like she was very clear to stay away. It doesn't matter. Like our amends are not so we get a fairy tale ending. My aunt didn't want to hear my apologies for being a crappy niece. She actually wanted me to stop being a crappy niece and start being a good niece, start demonstrating it, and just show up, call and reach out. And that other person, that former friend, I have been able to make the amend, but it's in my behavior. Because I talked poorly about her to people. And I don't know whether she knows that or not, but I know it. And people knew that we were friends and that the friendship ended, and people would ask me, what's up with so and so? What's up with so and so? And my amend now is I only say kind things about her. When people try to bring her up, I say, she was an incredible mentor to me. She taught me a lot. I learned a lot from her, which is all true. I'm not gonna lie, but I'm not gonna ruin her name. That's not what I do anymore. So I can make the amend, even though she doesn't want to hear from me. Page 78 is gonna talk about owing money. We don't dodge our creditors. And it actually says here that you can arrange the best deal you can. You can let these people know that you're sorry. Our drinking has made us been slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we're afraid to face them. So if you owe money, credit card debt or other debts, you owe people money. And you've been ignoring the bills. We're told here you can actually go to these people and make payment plans, right? Sometimes with credit card companies, you can actually, we're told you can make a deal with them. You can go to them. right? Make an honest deal with them and start paying it down. And the beautiful thing is, when you start paying your bills, you don't have to hide anymore like a prisoner in your house when the phone rings. You don't have to pretend and have like it go to voicemail or have the kids answer it and say you're not home. You can actually answer the phone and be a lady in your own home, be a man in your own home, you know, and that gives great dignity. That just gives tremendous dignity, to not be a prisoner in your own home. You know, if you've committed a criminal offense, which might land you in jail if it's known to authorities, maybe it's only, you know, a petty offense, such as padding the expense account. It says most of us have done that sort of thing. Many of us have done things that were illegal, that, you know, we took things. Page 79 says, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there's many ways that we're going to be able to clean this up. There are some general principles which we find guiding, and I think this is important. Here's the principles. Reminding ourselves that we've decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we're willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. So here's the general principles and guides. One, we decided that we're going to go to any length to have a spiritual experience. Basically, I'm saying that my relationship with God is first. That is what I'm going to put first and foremost, and I'll do anything to have a close relationship with God. Two, pray for strength and direction to do what's right. If you don't know, pray. Pray. And once you're given direction, you know, when I found out, right, remember we're looking for a good relationship with God. God just doesn't direct me. He gives me the strength to follow his directions. And sometimes that comes in the way of resources. He gives me resources, people, the right words, the right timing. Number three, we're not focused on our personal consequences. You know, this is where we lose our self-centered, selfish thinking, when all I'm concerned about is my consequences. That's selfish thinking. And four, even if we lose our reputation, you know, it says, or freedom, we actually would sooner go to jail than shrink. And the way I kind of look at it like this is, I was living in bondage anyway. I was living in a prison of my own making. And my reputation was like the warden. I worshiped my reputation. My reputation kept me in prison. And it's more important to me today to have integrity. I like my reputation, but it's more important to have integrity than a good reputation. You know, my hard amends I've shared before was having to go to coworkers and tell, I had to go to a coworker and tell her that I stole candy from her. And, you know, I have a good reputation and I had to risk my reputation. But what is it that I'm going to worship? Am I going to worship other people's opinions of me or God's opinion of me? Am I going to worship other people or am I going to worship God? And, you know, what I found out here was that, yeah, I had to place the outcome in God's hands or I was going to start eating again and then all would be lost anyhow. You know, and this is why we're doing it, you know, because we don't have any other options. If we don't do this, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when we're going to return to the food. It's not if, but it's when. You know, the next part of the big book goes into great detail about sex relations and infidelity. And I'm, you know, I'm not going to read all of this today in the interest of time, but basically, sex relations and issues of infidelity are tricky, tricky areas. And there's no absolute rules about what can be revealed. You know, if it's going to implicate another person, we have to have their consent. If we're going to tell someone something that's going to cause them great pain, something they don't know, and it's just going to hurt them, we don't do it. right? We don't intentionally cause pain. And what's essential is that we keep other people's happiness uppermost in our minds. You know, and for me, what this section always makes me think of is gossip. Because to me, gossip is very similar to sort of like infidelity. It's unfaithful relations with people. You know, and the person might not have a clue. If we've spoken poorly about them, they might not have a clue about it. So we're not going to go to them and say, hey, by the way, I was talking bad about you, because that's going to hurt them. Nor are we going to, you know, do that, because it's going to implicate other people. It's going to drag other people in. So what do we do about it then? What can we do? Well, for starters, remember, amend is to change. So we stop the gossip, you know, and an amend means restitution. It means to make it right. So it's not just apologize. How can I make restitutions for slander? How do we clean up? How do we make it right when we slandered something? I can start by saying things that are positive. So if I've talked poorly about someone, any opportunity I get, honestly, to say only positive things about them, right? So when I'm asked about someone that I've gossiped about, I got to dig deep. And that for me is a spiritual practice, because if it's not coming easy, I ask God, help me see this person like you see this person. Help me see their good characteristics. Soften my heart to this person. Remind me that they're your child. You know, and so we don't gossip, we don't apologize to the person we gossiped about, but we apologize to the people we gossiped to, right? So if I have gossiped with and to other people, you know, here's sort of what I would say to somebody. I would say, you know, I'm really sorry for polluting the conversation with negative words, that I value their time. So I might say to someone like, you know, I really value the time that we get to spend together. And I feel like I've wasted it by polluting it with negative talk about other people. And I don't want to do that anymore. And I'm sincerely sorry for doing that. And, you know, now what if the other person we gossiped with was really the instigator, right? That's where it gets tricky. We may have to totally ignore that fact and take responsibility for the ways that we contributed and participated in the conversation. And here's what I found out. In my mind, because we all have a story that we tell, we all have a perspective. In my mind, the person that was gossiping with me, oh, they were an equal participant. In fact, in my mind, they did it more than me. I was just sort of agreeing. But I don't know that that's really true, because when I've made amends to people for participating in gossip, rarely, rarely has the person said, oh, honey, it was me. It was more me than you. You were just, most of the time they say, oh, well, yeah, maybe I was doing that too. Yeah, well, you know, and sometimes they're kind of shocked by it. But I've yet had a person really say, you didn't say anything. You know, most of the time I really do find out I was a contributor in that. And only in my own mind was I making myself less, right? And I really was contributing in that conversation. And I think, you know, if in fact it does get that other person to think, maybe that's a good thing. Right? Maybe that is a good thing, because, you know, remember, we're showing up as God's representatives. And more than me telling people, I've got religion now, I'm representing God now. When you start showing up as somebody who doesn't participate in gossip, people start seeing you really are, you know, you're not just words about in relationship with God. They start seeing the demonstration of it. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly, he must keep sober, or there will be no home if he doesn't. So at this point, right, we stop making our families kiss our feet because we're not eating, right? It's not like the whole world has to be like, oh, Melissa, you're not eating anymore. That's great. You get a free pass. You can act like an idiot all you want, because you're not eating anymore. I have to tell you the truth, my family doesn't really care what I eat. I mean, I think they would if I started eating again. They might be like, holy smokes, what happened? But on a day-to-day basis, they don't care what I eat. It doesn't matter to them. What truly impacts their world is how am I behaving? Am I behaving like a recovered, healthy person? Or am I just, somebody on a diet? Right? Am I just behaving like a woman on a diet? So it says the alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections are uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. I'm going to emphasize that we have to take the lead. If there's damage that's been done in your home and things look like it's a mess, our job is to be leaders, is to set the pace. Remember, we're the ones showing up as forming a relationship with God. We're supposed to demonstrate God in the home. A remorseful mumbling that we're sorry, it's not going to be enough. It's not going to fit the bill. But it says we ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. So when we make these amends to our family members, especially our kids, we are to take complete ownership for our actions. Nobody caused me to act anyway. Sometimes kids feel like when we make amends that we're saying that we did a poor job parenting them and that we think that they're the byproducts of our mistakes. So we have to be really careful, I say, when we make amends to our children. And I say, it's kind of a good thing if we can tell our children that we're so fortunate that God saved them from our mistakes. That's what I say to my kids. I'm so grateful that there's a loving God that showed up and helped me parent where I was unable to, that showed up with Dad and filled in the gaps of where I wasn't able to, and that I regret not assisting God more in his work, and that they came out perfect despite all my mistakes. And then clearly say what it is that we're sorry for, that we regret doing. And we ask them if there's anything else that we've done that has hurt them. And we don't point out their imperfections. The spiritual life is not a theory. It says we have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think it ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. So it's my behavior, it's our behavior, our actions, and not our words. We don't talk on and on about these principles. Instead, we live these principles. And I share that in early recovery, I made some big mistakes with my family. You see that I'm running out of time, but especially, I tried to get my family to come on board with this spiritual thing. And basically, I would treat every problem that anybody in my family brought to me like they were a sponsee going to give a 10 step. And it was like my daughter would come to me with something she was upset about, like her sweet little 13, 14-year-old. I say sweet kind of in a funny way. It wasn't really so sweet. Anyone with a 14-year-old knows they're not so sweet. But she would show up with the drama of her day. And I was quick to say, well, honey, what was your part? What was your part in this? And where were you being selfish? And where were you? And that is like, I wound up owing this child a serious amends because what happened was she came to me later and said, I asked her one time why she wasn't telling me things. She's keeping things from me. And it hurt me. I was like, I want so much to be someone that you can trust. And she said, I can't trust you. I can't tell you anything. And I was like, it hurt me. And she said, you never, ever have my back. You never take my side. You have everybody else's side but mine. And I realized, yeah, she's right. And I owed her an amend for that. So I could talk till I'm blue in the face about selfishness and living in agreement with these principles, but I wasn't demonstrating it. Was truly what that girl deserved and needed was just a mom. Was just a mom, not a sponsor, not her sponsor. It wasn't up to me to make her see her part when someone hurt her feelings. It was for me to like say, oh, honey, that must really hurt. I'm sorry, not to fix it. And I think more and more what I found out, especially with the people in my lives, is that I have to trust God with them. If I don't want to talk incessantly about matters of God, I am to trust them to God. God has done wonders in my life. God will do wonders in their lives. And that I am seeing happen. I'm really seeing that happen. So there's so much here, on steps 8 and 9, but I'm gonna stop because I know that Janet is gonna talk about the promises the next time, and she'll have an opportunity to be able to fill in where we left off. So thanks. With that, I'll pass.